Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. We'll do an open mic for a moment, 1-800-449-8255. We can continue yesterday's discussion, but I want to talk about something new today, and it's going to require some of your imagination. Now, imagine if George Bush, in his second term, had appointed people calling for a Nazi revolution in America. Imagine if George Bush had appointed czars without any congressional oversight or congressional approval, who espoused a Nazi state and wanted a Nazi revolution, a National Socialist Revolution in the United States of America. You would say unthinkable. It can't happen here. Well, now let's take the optic chiasma of your brain and reverse it. We have a president who could never have passed a security clearance test to become an FBI agent or even a Secret Service agent, who has surrounded himself with outright communists in the White House. The green jobs advisor is a man who knows nothing about the environment, a man who knows has no scientific training whatsoever. He is a street thug, in my opinion. His name is Van Jones. Van Jones is a 9/11 truther who says that the Bush administration prepared 9/11 as a pretext for war. This is a man who has joined hands with Cynthia McKinney and Code Pink founder Jody Evans. This is a man who called Republicans AHs. This is a man who consistently uses racially charged language. This is a man who says that white polluters and white environmentalists have steered poison into minority communities. This is a man, Van Jones, who was a declared communist during the 1990s. This is a man who was with a group that looked up to Mao Zedong as an inspiration. Mao Zedong, aptly named Zedong, was responsible for the deaths of 60 million Chinese. Mao Zedong is one of his heroes. And he is in the White House. Again, you can't understand what I'm saying to you, you left-wing vermin, you. But what if a conservative had won and surrounded himself with a neo-Nazi? What if he had put skinheads as czars into the White House? Do you think the empty skirts at ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, and Fox would be up in arms? Do you think the empty skirts, the lipstick girls at Fox would be screaming about it? Why are they not screaming about Van Jones? Why are they wasting your time about a bitten finger when we have had a communist revolution in America with the greatest imposter in American history slipped into the White House, who has surrounded himself with overt, outright, anti-American communists? And you wanted me to go light today because it's Labor Day weekend? When the hell are you people going to wake up to what's going on around you? You have overt communists in the White House. You have people there who are czars. You're living in the United States of America? Where are you living, you idiot, you? You don't deserve to have freedom. If you permit this to go on, if you let those losers called Republicans not get this man out of the White House, Van Jones, if you let those losers called Republicans not do your job, then throw those damn vermin out with the Democrats. I want an independent party in this country. I want returning war veterans to run for office. I want them to knock every phony Republican. If you think that it's only Olympia Snow, and you think that it's the guy from Pennsylvania, Arlen Specter, if you think they're the only rhinos, 80% of the Republicans are fraudulent rhinos. And I stand by those words. Throw the bums out. The Democrats are all communist socialists. You know that. Oh, they call themselves Democrat Party. They're the Socialist Party, USA. The left-wing wing, or the left-left wing of the Democrat Party, is the Communist Party. The moderates are socialists. There are no Americans in the Democrat Party. There are no people speaking the American language. When I say that, I mean name one American Democrat living today in power who talks about borders, language, and culture. Name one Democrat who supports borders, language, and culture. Name one. And if you can't, then I stick by my words. The Democrat Party is a socialist party. The far left wing of the Democrat Party is a communist party. The Republican Party, 80% is a socialist party. You have 20% hardcore Americans in the Republican Party who understand what borders, language, and culture mean. We are the last hope for this country, or it's all over. If you let a street thug like Van Jones stay in the White House without demanding that the Republicans hold a hearing into his background and get him out of there immediately, then you don't deserve freedom. You deserve to live with a ring in your nose. You deserve to become a slave in your own country. Shall I repeat it? Who we are talking about? A man named Van Jones, who's a so-called czar of green jobs. The man has no background in the environment whatsoever. He has no distinction whatsoever in understanding what the environment is about. He is simply a thug, in my opinion, who has been put into the White House by Obama because Obama has a bigger plan for you. And that bigger plan is a fully armed domestic military force that is bigger than the U.S. military, that is armed better than the U.S. military, and that is run by thugs like these people that he has put into the White House. And if you don't wake up before long, you're not going to be able to wake up at all. He is a declared communist during the 1990s. Van Jones once associated with a group that looked up to Mao Zedong as an inspiration. Mao Zedong killed 60 million of his own communist Chinese. 60 million Chinese were killed under Mao Zedong. Now, I ask you, do you remember when then-Senator Barack Obama was running for office? And that loser, degenerate McCain, when we said Obama is dangerous, he's tied to radicals and overzealous activists, that undermining SOB McCain, that rhino of rhinos, that fraudulent Manchurian candidate, had the nerve to say, oh, no, he's a nice man just like me. He's a good American. No, Obama's a good American just like me. So now you have now President Obama in a very tricky phase of his young presidency, trying to push socialized medicine as step number three in his plan to turn America into a communist nation. And around him are overt left-wing fanatics like Van Jones, and the media is silent, including that putz Neil Cavuto on Fox, who talked about a bitten finger. Play the media idiot of the day. Go ahead.
Well, the hunt is on for the guy who bit off my next guest's finger. Authorities are trying to get their hands on
Get off
on
my
the
show, you loser, fraud, you Abbott and Costello faker, you. Why aren't you doing your job, Cavuto? You're a fraud. You're a fraud, all of you over there, with your leg crossing and your lipstick. Here are people who are accurately named communists. I'm not saying it for rhetorical reasons. These are accurately labeled communists. They are accurately named communists. And we on the right have an administration that is openly socialist slash communist. How do I say that? Because he surrounds himself with people, puts them in the White House, who actually label themselves socialist or communist. Do you hear me? These are people who have labeled themselves socialist or communist. Did you hear what I just said to you? And this man is inside the White House, and you're looking up to him? Can you believe this? He's named a hero of the environment by one of these left-wing magazines. What has he ever done for the environment? I will challenge this fraud to come on this show and compare his background in the environment with mine, Michael Savage. While this fraud was reading Mao Zedong, I was trekking in the rainforest of the South Seas, collecting medicinal plants, hoping to find various cures for illnesses. I have a real degree in fields related to environmental issues such as botany. This fraud went to Yale and got another law degree, just what the world needed. Another lawyer from Yale, another communist lawyer from Yale University. And now he's an environmentalist. So there it is, inside the White House. He's put in there as a czar, which of course is un-American to begin with. And here's a man who always uses race. Here's a man who's always described himself as a revolutionary. Here is a man who is in the White House waiting for his marching orders from Chairman Obama. Here is a man who says that the September 11th attacks were rigged up by the U.S. government in order to get us into Iraq. And this man is a czar. And Obama says he doesn't know what he's doing in the White House. It is Obama. These are reflections of Obama. 1-800-449-8255. It is the Savage Nation. MichaelSavage.com is the website. If you want to talk about the White House Green Jobs advisor who called Republicans AHs, if you want to talk about his communist past, if you want to talk about a worthless Republican Congress that refuses to investigate this dangerous individual and the other czars that have been appointed by Chairman Mao Zedong Obama, you can call me. I'll be right back. You know, everything that your ancestors fought against, the fear that communists would change our way of life, that communists would take over America, everything that your ancestors may have died for has happened. We have a naked communist in the White House. I stand by those words. And I'll repeat why over and over again. A, he surrounds himself with czars like Van Jones who are open Leninist Marxists. Number two, look at this now. Take a look at this. Honduras. They throw out the corrupt Marxist dictator, Zelaya. His own Supreme Court throws him out. The people said, no, you're not going to come back. You had your terms. You served them. There are term limits. He said, no, I want to do away with term limits. I want another term. It went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said to Zelaya, get out of the Honduras. He comes back. The military throws him out. Take a guess what Obama just did with Hillary Clinton. The United States took the side of the communist dictator Zelaya in Honduras. How many different ways do you have to see what's going on? They're nice to Chavez, who is in Syria, saying that Israel's a cancer on the world. Chavez, Zelaya, Obama. How far do you think it has to go until you wake up one day and you're a prisoner in your own country? And why are the Republicans silent? Where is the Republican Party? They're worthless. They're totally worthless. What good are they? You know, in England, you have a corrupt labor socialist government under Gordon Brown, as you well know, who banned me from entering the country because they're afraid of my stand on many issues, including borders, language, and culture. This piece of garbage is the man behind releasing the Lockerbie bomber. The people in England hate his guts. He's going to be thrown out very shortly, and a so-called shadow government, which exists now, will take power. See, they always have two parties in England. They have the party in power, then they have what's called a shadow government. We should have a shadow government called the opposition, meaning the minority party, but they're silent. Why are they so silent? Why are the Republicans silent? And is their silence not complete? Does that silence not indicate a complicit acceptance of the Obama Marxism? How many years did I warn you that George Bush was a fiscal socialist? How many years did I say to you, George Bush is not a fiscal conservative? I was the first in the media to note it. I was the first in the media to say it. Unfortunately, no one listened to me as they're not hearing me now. George Bush is the man who greased the skids for the takeover by this imposter, Obama. Don't think he was put there by accident. The same power structure that put Bush in, the same power structure that's on Wall Street, meaning Goldman Sachs and company, that put them all in, wanted Obama in, and they're making billions and billions of dollars off Obama's policies. You know, it's very reminiscent of another dictator who came along in the 1930s, who initially was supported by the capitalists of that country. They said, you know, this fellow from Austria is very dynamic. He's charismatic. He moves the people. Let's help get him elected because he'll make us a lot of money when he rebuilds Germany. And sure enough, the new dictator in Germany at that time made sure that a Krupp Steel made a lot of money. The manufacturers were rolling in money as a result of his public works programs. Remember, he created jobs. Young Adolf created jobs for Germany. He restored the economy primarily by pumping money into public projects along the lines of FDR and BO. Public works projects have always been the way the dictators buy votes. In the old days in Chicago, they gave out $5 bottles of cherry brandy to bums in the street. Now they give out green czar jobs to the same type of personalities with with degrees from Yale University, which are worth about as much as a degree out of a Cracker Jack box. So the fact of the matter is we now have in the White House a man who is moving America into dangerous waters. We're already 50, 60, 70% there. Bush got us 50% there. Bush took us on this socialist course. You say, well, why would a capitalist, why would the capitalist at Goldman Sachs want to make the economy socialist? You see, you can't make that connection. It's very difficult to make that leap because many of you have a false notion of what socialism is and what socialists do, and you think that socialism means no money. What you don't understand is that there are billionaires in socialist countries as well, but there's a very small, if existent, middle class at all. What they do is they shrink the middle class. So you have a ruling class, and then you have a poor class. It's a two-class society, not a three-class society. The United States of America has always had and built itself, prided itself on its large middle class. As you know, the middle class has shrunk under George Bush and is shrinking now even more rapidly under Barack Hussein Obama, because the goal is a ruling elite, the Hillary Clinton crowd, the Obama crowd, the Kennedy crowd, the Goldman Sachs crowd, the George Soros crowd, and throw in a few others. They want to run the world, and they don't want you to have any say in it. That's why they hate your guts when you go to a town hall meeting. They don't want you to go there. They want that to be made illegal. They want to close it off to the American people. They want rent-a-mobs to come and say, you are great, you are wonderful, so they can continue to divide up the treasury and give it out to their friends and further bust the country out like a bad sporting goods store in The Sopranos. Well, I said what I want to say today. Goodbye. That's what I like to say, guy. Now, because I woke up today, I wasn't going to come on the air. And the reason is I am talking to you as though I am inside a drum. It's as though I'm underneath water in a swimming pool. I don't know. I woke up with my left ear resonating. I was going to go to an ear, nose, and throat guy. But the thought of going to another doctor and having somebody stick something in my ear made me come on the air instead. And I say, you know what? Either it'll go away or it won't go away. If it goes away, there was no reason to visit the doctor and there was no reason to worry. If it doesn't go away, then I can, of course, still go to the doctor. And when I go to the doctor, either it will be curable and it'll go away on its own after visiting him three times, or it won't go away. If it goes away, then there's nothing to worry about. If it doesn't go away, then I can go to another doctor a month later, in which case there's nothing to worry about other than when it'll go away or it won't go away.
Savage.
You say, how do you wind up in an America with an overt socialist president moving toward the communist side, surrounding himself with czars, some of whom are overt communist, socialist, anti-American types? How did it happen? Well, you have to look at the universities. The universities, as you know, are 99% Marxist, filled with people who have never met a payroll, filled with people who don't know what it is to make a living, filled with people who want to teach four contact hours a week and collect $100,000 a year in free housing. And they think it comes from nothing. People don't know the first thing about the guts it takes to create a capitalist enterprise. In other words, total and absolute idiots, basically, by and large, in the social sciences. Now, here are the 11 wackiest college courses of fall 2009 that we've linked up on michaelsavage.com from Fox News. One, it's called Queer Mobilities. For $4,950 at Oberlin College, you will learn why, quote, only citizens get to claim queerness, whereas undocumented immigrants are always presumed to be heteronormative, close quote. In other words, you'll study why people always assume that illegal immigrants are straight. That's $5,000 a year for your student to take that course. And you wonder why Obama's in the White House. You can go to Georgetown University, and you can take a course in philosophy for $4,827 entitled The Philosophy of Star Trek. See, this is what they're teaching your children why they come out. They can't get a job. They can't write. They can't read. They can't speak. They know how to get high and hook up with someone to have sex. Now go, oh, what's wrong with this racist, sexist society? I can't get a job. Well, you have no skills, moron. You have no skills. You can't even drive a nail straight. You can't even turn a wrench on a pipe. You can't cut a piece of wood. Why should you have a job? Here's another one. For $40,000 a year, you can go to so-called Hobart, whatever that is, and William Smith Colleges in New York, whatever that is, and take a class on radicals ranging from Karl Marx to George Bush. In other words, They say Karl Marx is a radical, which he was. He caused the death of 90 million people in the last century. And George Bush, admittedly a failure as a president, but certainly not a radical. He was as moderate as they come. That's what passes for A and B, or the, shall I say, the alpha and omega of radical thought. It just shows you the deranged thinking in colleges. Here, we're talking about the 11 wackiest college courses of fall 2009 to show you the kind of degenerates that are in school today. Here is a man named Eric Seeger, Director of Media and Public Relations at Carleton University, wherever that is. And for $4,500, you can take a course called FemSex. The Carleton Gender and Sexuality Department builds it on their website as, quote, the class you've been waiting to take. Assigned homework readings range from I'm Not Fat, I'm Latina, and, quote, Myth of the Black Butt, unquote, to How to Have Energy Orgasms. This is being taught for $4,500 in a course by Eric Seeger at so-called Carleton College. This is, now you understand why the children come out of school and they can elect a guy like Obama, and they don't even know what's going on. You haven't had enough yet? There's another class at Ohio State on Harry Potter literature. Shall I continue? Because now you'll know how you wound up with Obama as president. How about going to MIT and taking a course in video game studies? Introduction to Video Game Studies. Students play and analyze video games while reading current research and theory in consultation with the instructor. So $4,500 per class. They're not reading Churchill and how he saved England from Nazi Germany, but video games, and they learn how to Twitter. They all know how to Twitter. They know how to hook up in a bar, but they can't tell you what in the world is going on around themselves. Here's another one at Cornell, once great Ivy League school, beautiful campus at Cornell University. For $700, you could fulfill your physical education requirement by taking tree climbing for $700. So-called Professor Mark Holton, who teaches tree climbing, says students are excited. Well, you've never offered a tree climbing class that is not filled to capacity. I'm not making this up. He said, we also go to Costa Rica for climbing in the jungle. You wonder why your daughter can't get a job after you spent $200,000 sending it to Orgasm University. At Alfred University in New York, you can now learn how to make maple syrup for $1,500. That's actually not a bad course. At least they could do something. You know what I'm saying? Maybe some of the illegal aliens can give up their jobs and they can let the American student make maple syrup. So we're reading 11 wackiest college courses for fall 09. Here's another one. Occidental College, wherever that is, never heard of it. It's at Los Angeles, I guess. And the course is called Stupidity. For $4,875, you can study stupidity at this college. And the course description is hard to beat. And it says, quote, stupidity makes itself felt in political life, ranging from the presidency to Beavis and Butthead. Stupidity is neither ignorance nor organicity, the description reads. And if you can understand that, you probably won't end up being dissected in the course. This is what passes for a course now in college. That along with courses on race, sex, and gender. You get the picture. And now you understand why Barbara can't read and why Johnny can't get a job. How about zombies? At Ole Miss, they teach a course called Zombies, the Living and the Undead. Students will watch zombie films, read zombie books, and write a zombie research paper. Do you realize what this is? This is the death of the West. Don't you understand what it is? Don't you understand why the moderate Muslim is starting to hate the Western civilization? You know, you think all Muslims are dangerous. You're wrong. Most of the Muslims in America, as you know, want the same life you do. The thing is, they don't want the degeneracy to go with it. They don't want their daughter to become a degenerate. They don't want their son to become a degenerate. They want the children to grow up to be something, make something of themselves. They wake up and they see what's going on in this country. They don't understand what country they moved to. You understand? And what I say to you, why I'm telling you all of this, here, students at Berkeley can learn about the television judge arguing with Judge Judy, a rhetoric class that costs a certain amount, a couple of thousand dollars, arguing with Judge Judy. So in other words, if you want to study logic, you don't study logic, you argue with a TV character at University of California at Berkeley. It's actually sad. You can read all of these courses by going to my website, michaelsavage.com. 1-800-449-8255. What would you like to talk about? I'm just giving you some courses. What is the most insane college course you've ever taken? Should Michael Savage accept the invitation to go to, what's the name of the university? I forgot already. Cambridge University, and accept the invitation to debate there. I mean, it's a very interesting invitation. It certainly has distinguished me as the most important talk show host in American history in that regard. You know that they would never invite Rush Limbaugh because he could never debate. And you say, well, why do you keep bashing him? I'm not bashing Rush. I'm trying to tell you that I'm really pissed at Rush. I'm pissed at Hannity. I'm pissed at the hemorrhoid because they will not cover the most vital and important story of their time, which is a fellow talk show host who their competitor, who has been banned from a Western democracy. I am very pissed at them for getting away with it because you let them get away with it the same way you let the Republicans get away with Van Jones in the White House. And that's why the New Yorker featured me as a man who has is a member of a party of one. Moderate drinking may help the brain. It's a new article came out in the American Journal of Geriatric Psychiatry. And they reviewed 15 studies that overall, all these studies followed more than 28,000 subjects for at least 2 years. And they found that moderate drinking may help the brain. But there's an interesting part to this. We've known this for a while. Now, all of these epidemiological studies controlled for age, sex, smoking, and other factors. Controlled is a very important word, which I won't explain to you, because many of you will say, well, I don't believe that because we don't know whether they're also smoking or how old they are. Well, that's what controlled means. It's controlled for that. But here's the interesting part. They found that moderate drinking may help the brain, but the studies variously defined light to moderate drinking as 1 to 28 drinks per week. So you could say you're a light to moderate drinker if you have just one a week or three a day. It's about 3 1/7 a day. Three drinks a day would be 20. 3 1/7 is 20. No, 3 times 7 is 20. How much is 3 times 7? I can't think. My ear is out. I'm telling you. 21, right? So it's more than that. It's 4 drinks a day, right? Oh, a week. 28 drinks a week is 4 a day. Is that correct? Yes. So you could still be a moderate drinker if you have 4 a day. I've said that for years. You remember years ago I said to you that the American Medical Association declared moderate drinking as 1 ounce of alcohol a day, while the British Medical Association declared it as 5 ounces of alcohol a day, whether it be 5 beers, 5 wines, or 5 shots, so to speak. And I said I like the British view of what moderation is. I used to drink about 5 a day years ago. I don't do it anymore. Maybe 1 or 2 is the most I can tolerate. I don't like the feeling anymore after that. Rarely will I hit 3. But let's say you're drinking 1 to 28 drinks a week. It's still considered light to moderate. It's very interesting. I would suggest you do it with food, by the way. Anyway, compared with abstainers, male drinkers reduce their risk for dementia by 45% and women by 27%. And they say, of course, their researchers acknowledge that studying the effects of alcohol on dementia is complicated by issues such as beverage type, standards of quantity, individual behavior that may interact with alcohol, blah, 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 blah. But the fact is that alcohol consumption in moderation is extremely helpful. And then they put a caveat, quote, the overall safety of alcohol use in later life needs to be evaluated in relation to all of the available evidence about its. Yeah, all right, fine. In other words, the study proves definitively that your grandfather was 100% right, that drinking is good for you. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Any topic is not fair game. Florida exodus. There's another article that caught my attention I put on the website. Rising taxes drive out residents. Did you hear what's going on? Dozens of top aides in Miami have been given a raise while property taxes were put through the ceilings. Exorbitant hurricane insurance premiums are doubling. They were doubled by Florida's government-run property insurer. An army of highly paid lobbyists was sent in to push for a steep electricity hike in South Florida's public utility. And so for the first time in Florida's recent history, actually the first time since World War II, people are actually leaving Florida. This is a big deal right now, and it's because of the chasm between the high cost of living and the low level of income that's going on there. But the main thing is the corruption of the politicians. You have fairly low income in Florida with extremely high hurricane insurance premiums, extremely high prices on electricity from Florida Power and Light, and they're lobbying the state for a 30% rate hike next year. And the people say it seems out of control to people here at the time when they can least absorb it. So local governments are totally corrupt. They give themselves raises. They hire their friends, and they give themselves 15% raises, as they've done in Miami, and they staff it with their own corrupt relatives. And here's an example in Miami-Dade. There's a Miami-Dade County Commission, a corruption-tainted body, whose members ran up hundreds of thousands of dollars in police overtime costs by using cops as their personal chauffeurs. And none of the commissioners face any sanctions as a result of doing it. But that's the same story on a national level. Here you have, perhaps right now, the most corrupt member of Congress, Charlie Rangel. Charlie Rangel is the head of the House Ways and Means Committee. The House Ways and Means Committee writes the tax codes for the United States, the tax codes, yes, for the United States of America. Charlie Rangel, it was found, did not report income over quite a few number of years. That was quite a scandal, and he was not punished because his friend Obama is in the White House. But it came out today that Charlie Rangel gave significant amounts of money to members of the Federal Commission that's supposed to be investigating his excesses, his alleged excesses. So if you think you're living in a banana republic or you're not too far from it, you're not mistaken. Rangel gave contributions to Democrats on a panel probing him. The reigning member of Congress's top tax committee is apparently wrangling other politicos to get him out of his own financial and tax troubles. That's Charlie Rangel. And he's saying it's all racism. Sound familiar? Gunman killed 17 at a Mexico rehabilitation center. Gunman broke into a drug rehab center in Mexico on the war with America, lined people against the wall, and shot 17 people in rehab for drugs and alcohol dead in another bloody day in Mexico's relentless drug war. And that's the news today. I'll be right back. Extra, extra. Read all about it. Read the letter inviting Michael Savage to Cambridge University to debate against political correctness. Now, I discussed this at length yesterday. I'm not going to do it again today. You can read about it on my website, and you can read how the UK banned Savage for oil. At least that's what we are beginning to believe it's all about. The same corrupt administration that released the Lockerbie bomber decided first to put Michael Savage on a list with murderers and terrorists. It's horrible. Just terrible. But if you didn't listen yesterday, I've been invited to debate at Cambridge University, which is great because it's a very prestigious debating society going back to 1815. Churchill debated there. Teddy Roosevelt debated there. Let's see. Kissinger was invited. The problem is there are some problems with this invitation that I've discovered, but I'm not going to let you know about it now. Okay. Nancy, Houston, Texas, should I debate or not debate? Welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to say I've been thinking about this thing that you were talking about with Cambridge University, and I thought to myself, how do you know that these guys aren't just, they really want you to come there because they want you to plead their case? You know that they have to have been studying you, and they know that you're a genius, they know that you're articulate, and they're like, God, here is our savior. Maybe people will wake up and they'll listen.
You mean they're taking the other side in order to get somebody to articulate what they themselves can't do because of the oppression that they're experiencing from their liberal government?
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. And I thought, I don't know if anybody had said that before, but I had been thinking about it for a couple of days, and I was like, that could be it. They're oppressed.
Nancy, you win. Nancy, I don't know what it is, really, and I don't know whether I'm being set up or not, but I'm sending you a free copy of Banned in Britain when it finally does come out. And for the rest of the day now, anyone who gets on the show will win a free copy of my book with the Union Jack. Is the Union Jack still permitted to be shown in England in a book? Maybe that's a double ban. And there's Big Ben, the clock tower. I don't know if that's legal because it's big. In other words, the word big could be sexist. And the word Ben is sexist. Maybe we have to name it Small Mary instead of Big Ben. They should rename the clock tower Small Mary so it doesn't offend anyone in England. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, New York City, WOR, broadcasting from atop a high-rise. In downtown Manhattan. Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, it's a pleasure to talk to you, the Grandmaster of Conservatism and the Archangel of America.
Michael, I got a kick out of that with a bad ear. Go ahead.
Michael, you should go to Cambridge Union, but under the exchange that they have to agree to file an amicus curiae brief on your behalf to support you against Jacqueline the Jackal.
Well, they're only a debating society, Tom. I don't know if they can take a legal position on anyone's behalf, can they? You know, I'll tell you something. You know, it would be a very good sub-debate. Should Michael Savage be banned from England?
And you know what, Michael?
That would be a very good one to have in England. We could have that in England. Should Michael Savage be banned from the United Kingdom?
We'll declare them as a hostile nation to conservatives.
Well, it is. It is hostile. That's why I may take a group of 500 to 1,000 people to the Republic of Ireland, let them spend good money on the services and goods in Ireland, and then have a press conference on the border with the region controlled by the Brits. And that may be what I do eventually. I'll have to wait and see how I feel. Thanks for the call. I don't know what I'm going to do. Who knows? It's a long time. It's the summer now. The end of summer at the Hotel Ozone already, early September. Again, a heat wave. Every year the same thing. I actually keep journals and calendars going back 30 years. I have an obsession with it. And I even keep weather patterns. I've been doing it for years, you know, hot, cold, heat wave, strange weather. The same thing every year. First week in September, a burning heat wave in the Bay Area. Then right away the shysters get out the books. Oh, it's global warming. Look, the polar bear can't get over the straits of Polk Street. He can't run through Polk Street. The polar bears were caught on Van Ness Avenue by a shrinking glacier. They tried to get across the street, but the glacier stopped them. Oh, God, green. Look at the green czar. Green czar. Marxist-Leninist knows nothing about the environment. He couldn't tell you how chlorophyll works. I can guarantee you if Van Jones came on the show right now, of course he'll bone up on it now, and I said, you know, you're a genius who went to Yale, you're an expert on green jobs, you're a czar after all. Please explain how chlorophyll works inside a leaf. I learned that in the fifth grade. I taught it in the seventh grade to other students. I don't think Al Gore could answer the question. Give me the chemical structure of chlorophyll. No, Al, I'll tell you what. Let's make it easier. Give me the chemical structure of carbon dioxide. See if you can tell me what the molecules are in carbon dioxide, Al
Savage.
Gore.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. If you believe in dissent, then you believe in America. If you believe in no dissent, then you don't believe in America. If you believe in no town halls, then you are a Democrat and you don't believe in dissent. You belong in North Korea. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Yes, we warn you of a dictatorship every day. And except for Representative Paul Brown of Georgia, I don't know who else in the world knows what's going on. We have a dictator in the White House who says he wants to create a national police force. He's on tape saying that. You didn't listen to me. He basically wants to do other things that dictators do. And again, you don't listen to me. Yeah, him and Hillary Clinton decided to take the side of an ousted communist dictator in the Honduras. Again, you don't see it. And I'm only one man here. So a one man can only do so much, and particularly not a great day for me. I can hardly hear out of my left ear. He just took a head cold, I think, from the change in weather. Cold, hot, hot, cold, you know. And I feel like I'm inside a drummer, or I just went swimming and got water in my ear. It feels like that. And I know it's just, it'll go away. So I can't get too excited in this hour. If you care to talk about the topics I introduced in the last hour along these lines, or should I debate it at Cambridge, yes or no, 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. A gunman kills 17 at Mexico Rehab Center. Rising taxes drive out Florida residents. Feds didn't clear brush in wildfire area. Rangel gave contributions to Dems on panel probing him. the 11 wackiest college courses of fall 2009. These are all on michaelsavage.com. Let's see what else is up. Japan's first lady, I've been abducted by aliens. I mean, it would be funny if it wasn't real. It would be funny if it wasn't real. It is real. Even the Japanese people have lost it from so many years of internet addiction and Disneyland. This is, look what happened to them. From worshiping at Disneyland and the internet addiction, look what they produced as a first lady. She was abducted by aliens. You hear this? Now you understand why the Marxists are Marxists. Well, you want me to get into their heads for you? I will. They're all not necessarily evil. Most of them are evil, and they would put 20% of you into a death camp. But not all Marxist-Leninists are evil. A large majority of them are hyper-educated who think that they're smarter than you because they look around and they figure they are smarter than you. They look at how you behave. They look at what happens to your children. They look at the television shows that you watch. They look at the junk food that you eat. They look at the vacations you go on. They figure, you know what? You don't deserve freedom. They may as well control your life for you. You'd be happier. Now, of course, if you looked at their children, their diets, their lifestyle, they would be included in the slave class. Speaking of entertainment, I got to recommend a movie, by the way. I saw it last night by chance. This is what I love about cable TV. There's no coughing people, no H1N1, no Mexican flu, so to speak. There's no bodily functions having to listen to whatever. There's no Good and Plenty on the floor, no popcorn. It's you in the bedroom. Terrific, wonderful. We all love it. So you scan around. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. I stumbled upon a movie last night at 10 o'clock that has to rank now in the top bunch. What's the name of it? Red Belt. Now, Red Belt is about a martial arts teacher in Los Angeles played by a black actor whose name I forget. I've seen him before. It's an African name, and I actually tuned it in because I saw his name. I recognize it, but I can't remember. The guy is a fabulous actor. And he runs a little martial arts studio, and he gets into financial trouble, and he's got to, you know, compete. It sounds pretty typical of martial arts movies that you've seen before, but it's very atypical. First of all, it was written by David Mamet, and David Mamet has a checkered past as a film writer. I didn't like him many years ago because he had a shtick with the repeating. You know, his shtick was repeating sentences, and I didn't go for it. He's cut out the repeating of the sentences, and a man has really crafted a masterpiece here called Red Belt. Chiwetel Ejiofor, and I'm probably mispronouncing the actor's name. Is that correct, Chiwetel Ejiofor? Yeah, I'm as close as I can get it. He's very the correct word for his – the reason he's appealing as an actor, Chiwetel Ejiofor, is because his face is sympathetic and engages you. In other words, he pulls you in. He can emote. In other words, he's a real actor. He can emote. You look at him and you want to know what he's going to say the way I emote. In other words, my voice emotes some feelings in you, which is why I'm so popular and why you listen to this show. He, as an actor, can provoke emotion with his face. Plus, he's built great, and he probably is a real martial artist. So anyway, it's all about the world of mixed martial arts and the corruption within this world. That's what the author alleges, how the fights are really fixed and this and that. And you have to watch the movie, how they draw this simple guy, this honest, simple, honorable man into fighting by screwing him over financially and making him fight. And when he finds out it's fixed, what happens? And it's the whole Brazilian martial arts group is in it. A lot of famous people are in it, either playing themselves or others. Let me see what else is notable other than the dialogue and the pacing is superb. The choreography of the martial arts work in the movie, incredible. The women are beautiful. They're Brazilian women. They're really beautiful. Lighting is superb. The underworld of L.A. is played well with the shysters, the loan sharks, the bad lawyers, the verminous lawyer. I mean, the whole thing is done well. I really recommend it. It's called Red Belt. Oh, wait. Here's the part. Movies rarely bring you to a point where you feel – I mean, you like it. Let's say you're enjoying it. But will you actually get an emotional reaction where, like, your eyes, let's say, you know, a little emotion? I had it with this movie toward the end, and I'm not going to give away the end. But in the end – there's a scene where some Japanese jiu-jitsu experts, obviously the real McCoy, are included in the film. And you look at these guys' faces. The faces of these guys alone are worth the entry ticket into this movie. If you're into masculinity, let's put it to you this way. Real men, I don't know how else to put it. with real faces as opposed to the ha-ha face that you're used to with politicians and the big smiles, the fake faces. I've told you before that real men don't smile. I don't mean they don't occasionally smile, but the actual face of an actual man is grim because they understand that each step is a potential step into the abyss. You know, we all take the long ride on the black boat and the black lake on a black night, and we never come back from it. We know that. But you see, most men from other cultures who've come from hard backgrounds, their faces actually project that grimness. It doesn't matter how much money they've made or they didn't make. Poor or rich, they still have a grim view of reality, and they're very protective of their wives and children, which is why they make great husbands, as opposed to guys who go to, let's say, Oberlin College and come out and they take a course in Beavis and Butthead 101. But no, go watch Red Belt. It was on Flick. I don't know. Showtime. Something else. I don't know. Stars Channel. Red Belt. It came out of nowhere. Guy who plays it with that Italian actor plays one of the sleazy nightclub owners. He's moved down tremendously over the years. Montana. Joe Montana. Is that his name? Not Joe Montana. You know, Montana, whatever.
Montana.
He's a good actor, but, you know, he had his day. 10 years ago, he's playing leads. Now he's playing triple C leads. But he's still projecting. And the sleazy's loan shark is good with the buggy eyes. He's great. He looks like Madoff's cousin. I mean, he's a little bit of a stereotype here and there. You know, the loan shark is a Madoff job. But nevertheless, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. And I recommend it. Red belt. There's a black belt. And then there's a red belt. But the Japanese guys in this movie, the faces on these guys, you talk about samurai, and you talk about samurai faces, and the tattoo. Let's say you're into tattoos, which I'm not into. I do appreciate beautiful tattoo work, but I wouldn't have it on my own body because the Bible prohibits it. I mean, to be honest with you, thou shalt not mark your body, period. So I guess one of the things, my business, not your business. Do what you want. You want a tattoo? Go ahead. I don't care. It's your business anyway. You're not going to care what I say. Certain things I worry about, that certain things I don't worry about. I mean, I eat pork and shrimp, but I don't want a tattoo. I mean, you could say it's hypocritical. You know, if you're going to violate one law, you may as well violate all of them. I mean, you could say that. But I would say that eating a shrimp is not the same as killing your neighbor's wife, for example. I made a jump there. It was like a jump in logical joke. It's like a logical jump joke. You know what I'm saying? But in other words, you could violate a little bit. It's not the same as the Big Ten on a regular basis. Just because you eat a shrimp doesn't mean that you're going to go and do your neighbor's wife, right? That's actually the best of all of it. You look at them all, and it all boils down in the Bible to, you know, do unto others you have them do unto you. An old man taught me that 30 years ago. He said, I don't know about religion. He said, I studied them all. I met an old guy in a ship once, blind old man, 80 years old. I thought 80 was old then, you know. Hey, old man, I was the young guy. Everyone was partying upstairs. I was like bored of the partying. I was looking for meaning on a big trip to Europe. Went down to the old man, sat in the bunk. We had four to a cabin. There were three young guys and one old man going back to Holland. And I looked at him, and he was blind. And he looked up. So I said, what is the meaning of life, old man? I was into that kind of stuff. Old man, what is the meaning of life? It was like, you know, I was on a trek. I figured old men knew. Most old men don't know nothing because they were young once. They knew nothing when they were young. How could they know something when they're old? Exceptional men know something when they're young, and they know a lot more when they're old. Ordinary men know nothing ever. Anyway, so I look at him, and I say, old man, what is the meaning of life? I figured, who knew? Maybe I was high or something. I don't know. She looks up at me with, you know, staring blue eyes because he was blind, the poor guy. And he says to me, the meaning of life? The meaning of life? He says, well, young man, I don't really know. He says, I guess you're born holding it and you die holding it. So I said, all right, that's the best I can do on a big trip to Europe. That's the knowledge I got from the old man of what's the meaning of life. So I figured I better figure it out for myself. And I pretty much have it figured out for myself, not for you. I have nothing to offer you other than my own views of the world. And it's why I've said to you for 15 years on the radio, this is one man's opinion. I am not a politician. I am not a Republican. I am not a Democrat. I created the niche in radio called Independent Conservative. And here I be. Party of one, Michael Savage, banned in Britain. I'll be right back. Be here or be nowhere. You know what the evidence of a true democracy is? Loud, forceful disagreement in the political marketplace. When you hear no loud political discourse, you know you're living in a dictatorship. When you hear the amen corner agreeing with everything the president does, you know that it's over and the republic has died. As long as you can hear voices saying, I disagree with you, Barack Obama. I think you're terrible. I think you stink. I think you're wrong. I think you're crazy. Then you know you still live in America. You still live in America where there's a hope, where we can still have political discourse. The day it becomes illegal or immoral or dangerous to disagree with a president is the day you've lost your freedoms, my friend. So stay tuned, because I am a lightning rod of change. I am a lightning rod of hope. I am a lightning rod of disagreement. I am a lightning rod of the changes that you are hoping for, which is a change for the better rather than a change for the worse. Sure, he's giving us change, but this is not the change that most Americans want. And I would say even those who voted for this college professor did not expect so much radical left-wing activism so quickly. Sure, they expected something other than George Bush or that sad old man John McCain, but they didn't expect the neo-Marxist agenda to be forced down their throat. That's not what they voted for. It's all a lie. I want to digress for a few moments because I've been hammering you pretty hard on this issue for a few hours now. I've had conversations with some strangers over the last few days, and I found out that I have listeners where I never knew I had them. I knew I had listeners far and wide, and I knew that the listeners ranged all over the economic scale and all over the ethnic scale and all over the political scale. And I also knew that I had many listeners behind prison bars, and that's because people who are trapped behind prison bars have very few options to exercise their minds. Many of the people behind prison bars never had formal education. Many of the people behind prison bars never had the opportunity to read and to try to understand for themselves what is going on. And they find my show, they may at the beginning not have understood, they would have said he's the biggest A-you-know-what in the world, but after they've listened to me for a while, they start to say, you know what, this guy makes sense on this, he makes sense on that. And they've heard me say that all of us are one mistake away from being locked up in this country. You've heard me say it. We have more people in prison proportionate to the overall population than any country on earth, and that's a very sad statistic. There are over 1 million people locked up behind bars, sometimes for minor infractions. No one is arguing that we should have tiers for the murderer, the rapist, the pornographer, the counterfeiter, the terrorist. No one is saying that. But there are too many people behind bars in this country, and they're thirsting and they're hungering for something from the American media other than talking about breasts and panties. Somebody talking about something other than a hockey puck flying into a cage. Somebody talking about something other than a moron swinging his arms and hitting a ball. They want to hear something about their life and the meaning of life and why they're behind bars and what they're going to do with their life when they get out from behind bars and how they can make a meaning out of their lives. And I am talking to you if you are in a prison cell or on a Gulf Stream. And I know I'm talking to you if you're behind a prison bar or on a Gulf Stream or in a Chevy or in a Prius. Why? Why do I exist? I exist, my friend, because you want me to exist. If you didn't want me to exist, I wouldn't be here. The reason I exist is because you need me. The reason you need me is because there's a desert out there. There's a desert in the American media, and I am wandering in this desert with you, not trying to make the Red Sea part, but trying to make you see within this Red Sea that you are a part of this sea of life. And this discussion today, if we never have another discussion about this, and I don't know that we will, I often don't get this worked up, but I'm very worked up because I have seen what happens with people who want to do good and where it can lead to. Watch out for the do-gooders. The do-gooders will nail you to a cross faster than you can say Roy Rogers. And they will do it in the name of progress. They will do it in the name of advancement. They will do it in the name of helping you, but you will be hanging from that cross and begging for mercy nevertheless. I am telling you that embryonic stem cell research is not a noble endeavor. It is the exact opposite. I am also telling you that adult stem cells hold as much, if not more, promise. And the only reason this college professor acting as president said to you, we are going to have embryonic stem cell research again, is because he's paying back
yet another constituency, which is the abortion racket. The abortion racketeers have broken the champagne open today and are still celebrating as I speak, because they are going to make new fortunes again.
Savage.
Well, it's Labor Day weekend, and I'm selling the house. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. The way that phrase come from, I remember when I was a kid working as a busboy in the Catskill Mountains to pay for college, the people would come. The first rush, they come. Some came for Memorial Day weekend, and they went home. They took the 4 day. Then the actual mob would show up around the end of June, obviously, July 4th. And it ran through, Labor Day. By around Labor Day, it was the last hurrah. You had to make the money for the whole year for tuition for college. In those days, there was no government loans for kids to go to college. You either earned the money to go, you worked your way through college, your parents paid for it, you didn't go, and life went on. So you did something else in life. But the point is, we'd work 10, 15-hour days, 7 days a week. We didn't care. We were young. We made money. We didn't ask for a handout. The end of the summer, there was a maitre d' up there. I forget his name. He was a bit of a nut. Fat guy. We'll let it go at that. Anyone listening who worked up there knows who I'm talking about. And he had a saying. He would dance around the back bamboree with all the guys working, and he'd get giddy, in other words, around Labor Day after 10 grueling weeks of working the kitchens of the sweaty Catskill Mountains, serving 6-7 horrendously fattening meals a day to people who really wanted their money's worth. Let's put it to you that way. Let's be polite about it. Even if they couldn't eat anymore because they were paying for those 2 weeks, they ate. And they ate and they ate, making the cardiologists and the proctologists and the very happy in New York City. So he would go into the dining room on Labor Day. As I say, he was giddy. And he'd be knowing it's over a few days, and he starts singing, "It's Labor Day and I'm selling the house." Who knows what he meant? But everyone would be cheerful. First of all, he was like king, he was the boss. He could fire you, no EEOC, no one could claim racism, nothing. He didn't like you. You could be the best worker in the world. They could throw you out on your can and you collect nothing. And go to the state and complain. So everyone watched their step and worked very hard. That's the way it was. So he'd begin, when he was happy, you were happy, in other words. When he was unhappy and miserable, you stayed out of his. So on Labor Day weekend, he'd say, it's Labor Day and I'm selling the house. So who knows the heck it meant? I was also a lifeguard at that hotel at some point. Never saved anyone, but I enjoyed sitting up in the stand with the thing on the nose, just with the white. Hey, did anyone see that movie, Red Belt? Am I the only one in America who saw the movie with the actor whose name I forgot already again? It's a hard name. I mean, some foreign names are impossible to remember. Or accuse me now of something because I can't remember a trick name from Africa. Go ahead. Call up Charlie Rangel. Call up the governor of New York and say, I didn't remember his name, therefore I should be accused of something before some kangaroo court. Go ahead. What a country we live in. I just talk the way I see things. If it's offensive to you, I'm sorry, you're a loser. You live in a strange world. By being mere nature of conversation, you're going to be upset by certain things. That's what conversation is. So if you're upset, what you do is you refute the thing that made you upset. That's the way conversation works. Converse with verse. So if someone says something that upsets you, you say, I take offense at that, and here's why. That's called conversation. But if you don't have the brains to react to it, and you say, racism, sexism, thisism, thatism, because you're a moron. That's all. Can I use common sense at Cambridge? I have to wear a tuxedo, number one. I don't mind. I still have one. I can get the moths out of it. A top hat. But I'm not sure I like the structure. I thought it was me against them. But now I hear it's three on my side and three on their side. I don't know if I can put up with that. Because each person gives a 15-minute speech. I'm going to sit there like Mr. Schmuck for an hour listening to four speeches of 15 minutes each? Five? Before I get to say a word? A man in radio can't sit for an interval that long in a tuxedo without saying anything. What if someone says something that offends you? Your natural instinct is to fight back. It's like you're in the ring with somebody. They're going to say something. You're going to try and take their head off if you disagree with it. Logically, of course. But if you can't react, what am I going to sit there for? Drink tea? I have to think it through. As much an honor as it may be, and it may be a historical opportunity to go from the Bronx to Cambridge, I don't know. Maybe Cambridge would have learned something from the Bronx better. Nice architecture. I love the bridges of Cambridge when I visited. Believe it or not, I was actually at Cambridge about 20 years ago visiting an old friend who I haven't seen in 20 years. And he actually graduated Cambridge. I haven't kept in touch with him. You know, the architecture is superb, particularly if you went to a municipal college that looked like it was in Eastern Europe. I went to Queen's College and it looked like it had been designed in Gdansk. You know, everything was grim and black and white at Queen's College. Even the candy machines were like out of a bad movie from pre-Lech Walesa Poland. I liked gritty. It didn't bother me. I was there to learn, that's it, and go home. There was no gentleman's rowing club, nothing. There's no gentleman's rowing club, no fencing. You went, you studied, you took a job, you went home, you had a meal, you went to sleep, you got up, the factory whistle blew, back to work, back to school, boom, no rowing clubs, no men's drinking club. No architecture to speak of at Queen's College. You know, everything was like, you know, very utilitarian. Ayn Rand, you know, Eastern Poland before the wall came down. But Cambridge, wow, the arches, the filigree on the windows, the beautiful, the allure of the arch of the bridges over the rivers that ran through Cambridge. Just, they took my breath away. I mean, it was the way I thought white people lived. I thought all white men went to Cambridge. At the time, I actually passed for white. That was a joke that went around. They used to say that about me. Oh, you know, he passes for white. That was a joke. You have to understand. It was said to me by Englishmen, by the way. And it was understood to be a joke. Of course, you would take offense at that, too, and twist it into something that it wasn't. You have to understand the nuance of that. And those of you who claim you have nuance generally don't. You don't even know what nuance is. It's an excuse for political correctness in order to control people. That's all. So we were talking about various things here. Congresswoman, this, congressman, that. AFL-CIO Dems pushing the Wall Street tax. I have that on a website. 2 days. Take it down already. I'm sick of it. And take down New Legal Letter to Britain and Audio Michael Savage Band to Britain. Put it all in one box already. Too many of me. Here's one. Jew hater Chavez attacks Israel. Oh, you're shocked? Why, because Sean Penn kissed his behind? Because Danny Glover kissed his behind? You didn't know he hated Jews? I told you before that in Venezuela, the population of Jews has been cut in half since this dictator arrived on the scene. But many of you Jewish liberals don't know what you're doing. You're digging your own grave all over again. You just don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're doing. Half of you are on medication. You don't know what the hell you're doing. I told you, Chavez, what he was and what he was doing. I can name names of people who went over to kosher his presidency. Oh, yeah, big shot First Amendment lawyers went over there. Oh, yeah, the election was perfectly fine. Here's a man who hates Jews, hates Israel, in Syria, attacking Jews. Israel is an imperialist nation that annihilates other people. And there he is. And half the Jewish liberals in America love Hugo Chavez, love Fidel Castro, love Mugabe, love Obama, love Van Jones. They don't know what they're talking about. They endanger themselves with their own liberalism. Their liberalism supersedes their intelligence. How does it happen? I don't understand it. I worked in the Borscht Belt. I come from the same background. How come I didn't get infected with the red gene? How did that happen? How did the red gene miss me? Alex in San Diego, speaking of the red belt, welcome to the program. What's on your mind? Go ahead.
The Good Savage.
Yes.
Awesome movie. Seen it 3 times. I do jiu-jitsu myself for 3 years. Great actor, but nothing like our regular instructors. They're all Brazilians.
So jiu-jitsu today is all taught by Brazilian?
Most of them are. Wait,
hold on. But the art form began in Japan, not in Brazil.
Absolutely. It originated in Japan, and one of the instructors, I believe, moved down to Rio de Janeiro and started teaching it way back when with the Gracies, and it came.
Yeah, I understand the Gracies took the Japanese teaching of jiu-jitsu to a new level. I understand that. But it still doesn't diminish the power of the original jiu-jitsu form, does it?
Absolutely not, Dr. Savage.
Well, I don't know much about it. I mean, the fact of the matter is I'm not a martial artist, but I certainly love good art, and I thought the movie Red Belt was phenomenal. Thank you for the call, Alex.
1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I asked you a number of questions before, and we have some callers on that. Here's a fellow who says he went to Cambridge. He has an opinion on my being banned in Britain and whether I should accept the invitation. Stephen Bakersfield, thanks for calling. You're on the program. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, good afternoon. It's a pleasure
Thank
to you,
sir.
You, sir. Yes, I did attend Cambridge. I was a member of the union, though I was not necessarily an active participant. The structure might be a little bit different than you understood from the union. You will have an opportunity through the course of the debate to speak because people do ask questions throughout. And in fact, when you do present, there will be an opportunity for people to actually ask you questions, in which case you will be able to engage in your...
All right, here's the question. Are they able to cut you off and say, stop right there, what about this, what about that, or they let you finish?
Well, that's a good question. There's a sort of president of the union who is going to make those decisions. So, yes, you can be stopped for questions in the middle,
okay.
But there's some process around it.
Okay. And can they jeer you and cut you off through jeering?
Well, that can happen, but there is a sense of civility that does not exist in the U.S. universities, I'm sad to say. But
right, and it doesn't exist in talk radio for sure.
But, Dr. Savage, listen, in 1933, the sister union at Oxford passed a resolution that this house will under no circumstance fight for king and country.
The motion, right, I remember that. I can't believe it.
The motion passed by over 100 votes.
Wait, repeat that for my audience, Steve. It went over their heads, I'm sure.
That the House, meaning the Union, the Oxford Union, will under no circumstance fight for its king and country.
So in other words, they were already traitors back in the early 30s.
They were already traitors. This was the elite of the country. The intelligentsia, and this is how they voted. It's chilling. I mean,
nothing's changed. So who then fought in World War II? Look, you're an American who went to Cambridge?
Sir.
Okay, so answer this if you can, because you know much more about it. I don't know anything about it. The Battle of Britain. Isn't it true that the Air Force, the British Air Force, was largely made up of the elite from Cambridge and Oxford, or mainly Cambridge?
It was disproportionately represented. That's true.
But wait, if you say that the elite of Oxford said they will not fight for king or country, how does that jive here?
I think it jives in a few ways, Michael. First, circumstances had changed. This was a resolution in 1933. And this is precisely goes to the point why I think you need to go, because I think you're going to be part of a historic event. You need to go. I think you can help change the situation over there. And you could
so, in other words, they don't even know, or they're starting to wake up to what's going on in their own country, and they're trying to stand up to their own government?
I think that's right.
I
think that's right. And I also think in the U.K., and circumstances, it's been a few years since I was a student there, circumstances may have changed. But I believe there's still an undercurrent of civility, an undercurrent of receptiveness to different ideas. I mean, how many such invitations have you received from an American university?
Zero.
Well...
Zero. Zero invitations from American universities and zero invitations from American media outlets. They'd rather talk with the man whose finger was bitten off at a street event. I mean, it's unbelievable to me what's going on here.
You have the hemorrhoid with ears, and you have people of that caliber. What do you expect?
Well, I understand. So how did you wind up in Bakersfield if you went to Cambridge? That's not a negative statement. I'm curious. How did I wind up in San Francisco stranded? I mean, you know, it's the same thing. What are you doing in Bakersfield?
Working at an Arco station. No, I'm kidding.
Well, you know, at least it's a productive way of making a living.
No,
don't give away your living. All right, so you're there for commercial reasons originally, right?
No, the truth is I'm not even there. I there's no radio station. I'm in the greater L.A. area.
Oh, right. L.A. no longer takes the signal. I heard that happen. So you're in L.A. then?
So I listen to you through the Internet, through the Bakersfield site, the Kearns. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a shame in L.A., truthfully, because I had a large audience of Hollywood conservatives who were fanatic listeners to this show. And it just happened like that. But, you know, the liberals in Hollywood have taken a headlock on the stations over in L.A.
Well, they're out of their minds, aren't they?
Look, Steve, you know, it's interesting you brought up the elite of Oxford, 1933, will not fight for king or country. Then things change. They wake up and they become disproportionately represented in the Royal Air Force. And so many of the flower of youth in England died in the Battle of Britain and, in fact, died in World War II.
So do you think this country can still turn around from the communist path it's on?
I do.
No, I'm serious. It's, look, this is a bad time, Steve. You have an – do you agree with me? And don't say yes. You wouldn't anyway. I can hear it in your voice. Do you agree with me that Obama is an overt Marxist?
You know, I was skeptical that he was. But increasingly, I have to believe that he very well might be, Michael.
But why does he surround himself with czars who are overt or covert Marxists, meaning in their very, very near past they were Mao Zedong lovers, Lenin lovers, Marx lovers, and all of a sudden now they're green czars, they cut off their long hair, and suddenly they're straight-up, buttoned-down American politicians? I don't believe a word of it, Steve.
No, I don't either, and that's why I didn't believe it at the beginning, but increasingly I'm afraid.
Did you vote for Obama?
Of course not.
Well, I don't know. Many people who didn't like McCain because they knew he was a corrupt old bozo, a continuation of the Bush years, voted for this guy saying anything but a couple of years of Republicanism. But they didn't know that they were getting this guy.
No, I think I saw relatively early on what he was. I just did not think he was an avowed Marxist, which increasingly I'm reaching that conclusion.
What did you when you go to a place like Cambridge, do they have a thing, as they do here, called a major?
They do. Well, they call it reading. I mean, you read a subject, so whatever that subject is.
What was your subject?
Modern history.
As I couldn't have determined by your opinions. Well, Steve, it's an honor to have a man of your background on the show. Let me send you a free copy of Banned in Britain when it's out, and that should be in, I don't know now, 4 to 6 weeks. We haven't even sent it to the printer. We're running a little late. The first printing, first edition, is not yet sent to the printer. It's a great opportunity to buy it. New York publishers won't touch it. What does that tell you about America? I haven't received one invitation to an American university to speak. I am banned in Britain. I'm banned on Fox News. Let's put the others aside. And New York publishers who are out to make a living will not touch a New York Times best-selling author. Remember, I had 4 books in a row. Major League New York Times bestseller, The Savage Nation. Liberalism is a mental disorder, The Enemy Within, The Political Zoo, and they won't buy my book? Why is that? Why won't New York publishers, why won't New York media outlets, why won't American universities have anything to do with Michael Savage? Think about it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Article just came out in Human Events by Ted Nugent saying keep Gaddafi out of New York City. As you know, this murderer, Gaddafi, is coming to New York to the UN on September 23rd, along with his hateful buddies, Hugo Chavez, Ahmadinejad, and the others. And he's saying keep him out. It's disgusting. And he writes in his article, Ted Nugent does, so while a bureaucratic punk in the Brown administration was busy denying radio talk show host Michael Savage entry into the United Kingdom for hate speech, the same Brown government was in negotiations with a terrorist-supporting nation to trade a mass murderer for oil. Just another reason to never trust a bureaucratic government, punk. Good for you, Ted. I didn't know that you listened to the show. Thank you very much. At least you know the truth when you can hear it. Thank God there's a few out there who hear my my pleas. You know, here's an excerpt from Winston Churchill, The Last Lion Alone, 1932 to 1940 by William Manchester. Listen to this. The Oxford Union's resolution that it would, quote, in no circumstances fight for king and country had aroused Churchill's wrath, writes his biographer. He called it an abject, squalid, shameless avowal, a very disquieting and disgusting symptom. Its impact abroad would be disastrous. He thought of Germany, quote, with its splendid, clear-eyed youth marching forward, burning to suffer and die for their fatherland, and of Italy with her ardent fascisti. He said, one can almost feel the curl of contempt upon the manhood of all of these peoples when they read the message sent out by Oxford University in the name of Young England. And for 8 years, he was banished from the BBC. Winston Churchill, the man who really was the man who marshaled the spirit of England during the war against the Germans. And, of course, after the war, they threw him out again. After the war, the Labour Socialist government took the man who basically was their cheerleader, their inspiration, and they threw him out again and put in a socialist government. And here we are again. Here we are again.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, here's the Savage Nation report for the day. I woke up deaf in my left ear. That's right. Either God is talking to me and telling me not to talk, because as I speak with you on the microphone today, I feel as though I'm underwater. You remember when you were a kid, if you got water in your ear? I hear vibrations of up to a mile away. I can hear the highway a mile away in my left ear. It's frightening. Suddenly I have dog ears. It's really uncomfortable to talk because there's a hollow sound in my head. So I said, this is all a result of being invited to the Cambridge Union. Moses said to God, why are you picking on me? I have bad skin. I don't feel good. And God said, don't worry about it. You're the right guy because you're imperfect. I'm telling you, this is so I called an ear, nose, and throat man, but I'm not going to go because I want to be on the air with you. And here I am on the air with you because he couldn't take me till showtime. And as you well know, the adage of the show is the show must go on, right? Anyway, guys, this is the Savage Nation. You know, you look at the news. Let's go to michaelsavage.com. Have you read the letter inviting Michael Savage to debate at Cambridge? I wish you would. They say that it's the world's oldest debating society, founded in 1815, and that they've enjoyed the presence of many high-profile speakers, including American presidents Ronald Reagan and Theodore Roosevelt and Nobel Peace Prize winner Henry Kissinger. That's amazing. I'm honored. And they want me to argue against political correctness. That should be easy because I've done it for 15 years and I've lived it for all of my years. How can anyone be in favor of political correctness other than people who would like to kill free speech? I wonder who can take the position that it's good to eliminate the First Amendment? Who can take the position that it's good to inhibit free speech other than fascists who would like to control a nation? So it's going to be an easy one for me. There's no show prep for that one. Also in the news, cops jump on swine flu power. A pandemic response bill would allow authorities to quarantine citizens during a health emergency and authorize forceful entry into private dwellings. That's interesting. And, of course, it's in Massachusetts that it occurred first. The first fascist state in America. Massachusetts. Unbelievable. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number on the Savage Nation. And there are other stories on my website that we should talk about. There's the indoctrination plan of Barry Obama. A lesson plan that calls on school kids to write letters to themselves about what they can do to help President Obama. That's something you would see out of the master leader Kim Jong-il. And you thought he was a uniter. You went for the rubbish of Barry being a uniter.
Asking what you can do for your country.
Right. He's not asking what you can do for your country. He's asking how his country can do you. Brown didn't want Lockerbie Bomber to die in jail. See, that's his new appeal, Prime Minister Gordon Brown, who has mud all over his face. He's facing accusations of double-dealing after confidential documents were released saying that he released them for oil. That's the Lockerbie Bomber. But he said he did it for compassionate reasons. He didn't want the Lockerbie Bomber to die in jail. Ha! If you believe that, I have a nation to sell you. Also, I must tell you that they now say the Lockerbie Bomber is in an emergency ward in Libya, that his condition has turned for the worse. I don't believe a word of it. They did that to cover for Gordon Brown. I don't believe it at all. Most independents disapprove of Obama. GOP... Representative Ms. Bachman says that tax rates are like slavery. She's right. A dog has been issued a parking ticket in the Northern Territories. Well, I guess that's political correctness gone awry. Four legs bad. Four tires good. Also on MichaelSavage.com is a lot of other stuff that you need to read. The new First Lady of Japan
That's right. The once proud Japan says she's been abducted by aliens and that she knew Tom Cruise in a former incarnation. Oh, God. This is ruling Japan. And these are the, by the way, they won because they're anti-American. So I guess if you're a lunatic, you're anti-American. And if you're a lunatic, you should be a rising star of the left. Well, that makes sense, Beowulf, doesn't it?
Maybe they can make her the new green czar or something like that.
Oh, she is a green. She is definitely a green. You see her husband, the whack job with the long hair? How did a great nation like Japan elect these two lunatics? By the way, the site, the MichaelSavage.com site's traffic has doubled from 08 to 09. Thank you very much. We've gone up 146% in page views. I mean, that's something significant. 4.8 million page views in the month of August. It's nothing to sneeze at. So visit Michael Savage at MichaelSavage.com and read how the UK banned Savage for oil and get a rare, limited, beautiful hardcover edition of Banned in Britain. First printing, first edition in a beautiful hardcover copy that your children are sure to sell on eBay. Oh, what else is in the news here today on the Savage Nation? Well, you look around, it's so depressing. An Obamacare supporter has apparently bitten off the finger of a protester. Apparently, there was a rent-a-mob hired by the Obama minions to say, yes, health care, health care, health care, health care, free health care for illegals. And there were 25 people across the street who were counter-protesters. And one of the Obamaites who wanted health care so badly for illegal aliens ran across the street and bit off the finger of a protester, screaming, methinks thou protesteth too much. They recovered the finger, and we do not know if the protester who lost the finger had health care.
I knew the left was hungry for change, but this is ridiculous.
1-800-449-8255.
It looks like Representative Paul Brown, we've had him on the show before, has been continuing to listen to the Savage Nation because he's been raising the specter of the Democrats turning the United States into a totalitarian state. He's from Georgia, and apparently he's not changed his belief that President Obama may be fascist since he made similar remarks in Augusta in November. And he's out there saying it again.
Is that a Congressman Warns of Dictatorship story?
That's absolutely correct, yeah.
Well, Georgia on my mind. Play some Georgia on my mind in here.
Georgia. Georgia.
Georgia. I can't sing.
The whole day
through. Riots in China after hit-and-run syringe attacks. Taxi cab explodes near Times Square. Swedish dad in bid for breast milk. Oh, God. Well, look, if you have a prime minister in England who is a complete and total schmuck, who will release a mass murderer for an oil deal, and he's not in prison, if Gordon Brown is not in prison, and then you have a first lady in Japan who was just elected who says she was abducted by aliens, and then you have a complete and total imposter as president in America, why can't we believe that a Swedish dad is in bid for breast milk? Obamacare supporter bites off finger of protester. We always knew that they were compassionate and believed in tolerance, but we didn't know that the politically correct crowd would bite your finger off if you disagreed with them, did you? I mean, they bit my freedom off, but did you believe they would bite a finger off? Well, maybe in a way that is symbolic in that sense. Kidnapped girl's aunt tells story of reunion with family after 18 years. I don't want to even talk about it. You hear about the race card going on in New York.
The governor there?
Yeah, the governor. And Charlie Rangel, now that he's been found to be a tax cheat, he's bringing out the race card. How do they get away with this?
I noticed that Pelosi isn't going to take any action against Rangel. It's absolutely incredible.
But it's illegal.
Yeah.
Here is a guy caught being a tax cheat. He runs the tax committee. His name is Charlie Rangel. And here's what he has to say. Some Americans have not gotten over the fact that Obama is president of the United States. They go to sleep wondering, how did this happen? First, it was Governor Patterson. You hear? Now the dean of New York's congressional delegation has played the race card. And just as the governor did it, he's using President Barry Obama to do it. Rangel said that bias and prejudice toward Obama fueling opposition to health care reform. Can you believe this? Black people don't like this. They really don't like this. They hate it. They really hate this, that these bigots and these thieves and these crooks use race to peddle their thievery. Representative Peter King responded by saying, Charlie Rangel knows that race has nothing to do with the health care debate. He should not be implying that race has anything to do with it, said Rep. Peter King, R. Long Island. A State Conservative Party leader Mike Long called Rangel's comment, quote, outrageous and outlandish, and suggested that Congressman Rangel might be trying to deflect attention from his ethics woes. No kidding. It's going to backfire on them because everybody knows a con man when they see one. How did this country get here? Wow.
You've had black conservatives call into the program on numerous occasions decrying exactly that sort of tactic.
The high-priced whore or escort who romped with disgraced ex-governor Elliot Spitzer had a few comments to New York ladies. You know what she said? Did you hear this one, guys?
No, I haven't heard this one yet.
The hooker who romped with Spitzer and got the governor fired has a message because Spitzer wants to run again. So the hooker said to New York ladies, you know better than me. She said, get real and get over yourself. She said, the women who judge her said, you just love to judge people. That's interesting. Another, here's a hooker saying, don't be judgmental. Don't call me a hooker. Now, you talk about political correctness. You hear this? Here's a hooker saying, most girls, to varying degrees, of course, want to be pampered and have nice shoes, designer handbags, and gorgeous clothes. So, in other words, they're willing to become prostitutes with it? That's unbelievable. So, in other words, if a woman has that stuff and worked for it, let's say she became a doctor, a lawyer, a corporate executive, a teacher, a social worker, or even a normal housewife, they're all hookers now? That's terrible. The bad girl whose family lives in New Jersey blasted suburban Garden State housewives who are strung out on mood stabilizers. So, in other words, all the women in Sopranoland are on drugs. Spitzer stepped down after he was outed for paying $4,300 for sex with Dupre. You know, that alone should have gotten him thrown out. Any man who would have to pay $4,300 for a hooker when the going rate is $300, it just shows you that government officials don't know anything about reality when it comes to money. I mean, if the going rate is $300 for a hooker, right? And we're not talking about someone outside a fish market. That's the rate on an internet. Why would the governor pay $4,300? It just shows you that the government spending is out of control even when it comes to these things. He could have gotten 11 hookers for that amount of money. Why'd he get one? Well, that's like the government. That's like the budget of New York. Everything's 11 times as expensive. An aspirin, which costs 10 cents, costs $12 in New York. So there it is. In other words, the whole world is upside down. So let's see. We have a First Lady of Japan who was abducted by aliens and knew Tom Cruise in another life. We have a governor, an ex-governor of New York who paid $4,300 for a hooker when the going rate is $300, and you wonder why the budget's out of control. We have Barry Obama, who is addressing school children for the first time in American history, telling them that he wants them to do something for him personally, which is to brainwash their parents into health care reform. And the world goes on. That's As the World Turns today on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
People complain about the price of gasoline all the time. Well, if you think it's bad now, just wait. Under the Waxman-Markey cap and trade bill, it doesn't look as though gasoline prices will only go up and up. They'll go through the sky. Joining us now is Ben Lieberman, who has been looking into this.
Thanks, Michael. Well, Labor Day signals the end of the summer vacation season. Will it turn out to be the last cheap one for gasoline? The Obama administration and Congress certainly seem intent on making it so. Now, although pump prices from Memorial Day through Labor Day were far from a bargain at around $2.60 a gallon, they were more than a dollar lower than last summer when prices exceeded $4 a gallon for the first time ever. We can attribute much of the drop since then to the recession and reduced demand for gas. Millions more people no longer have jobs to drive to. Others have saved money by cutting back on or canceling vacation plans. Businesses have made fewer deliveries, etc. But recessions don't last forever. And if nothing is done to boost the supply of affordable fuel, the pain at the pump will return as soon as the economy recovers and demand picks up. Politicians should be using this time to help stave off the next big gas price spike. Instead, they're trying to do just the opposite. The worst so-called solution is the Waxman-Markey cap-and-trade bill, which aims to cut emissions of carbon dioxide from energy use. Proponents claim that emissions are warming the planet to dangerous levels, so they're seeking to reduce how much gasoline and other fossil fuels Americans use. The bill would cause gasoline prices to rise high enough so the public would be forced to use less and meet the bill's ever-tightening energy rationing targets. It's a deliberate effort by the U.S. government to make gasoline, not to mention electricity and natural gas, less affordable. According to a Heritage Foundation analysis, the bill would boost the price of the pump by 20 cents a gallon when the provisions first take effect in 2012, and the targets get tougher each year, and by 2035, the increase would be an inflation-adjusted $1.38 a gallon, and that's on top of any other price increases that might occur. By the way, even if one assumes the worst of future global warming, and there are plenty of reasons not to, this bill is estimated by climate scientist Chip Knappenberger of New Hope Environmental Services to reduce the Earth's future temperature by no more than 0.2 degrees Celsius by 2100. In other words, it's all economic pain for little or no environmental gain. At the same time, we're about to impose, or we might be imposing, this costly global warming policy. The president and Congress are cracking down on domestic production of oil. Last year, in the wake of outrage over $4 gas, President Bush and a Democratic Congress repealed the restrictions on energy leasing in 85% of America's territorial waters. But the Obama administration has reversed the pro-energy momentum from last year, thus far refusing to open any new areas to leasing and even canceling some existing leases. Meanwhile, Congress has introduced bills that would place further restrictions on domestic oil and natural gas drilling, both onshore and offshore. As it is, the U.S. is the only oil-producing nation on Earth that has placed a significant portion of its domestic potential off-limits, and Washington is about to make it worse. Gasoline prices are notoriously hard to predict, but it seems like the current respite from high prices is likely a temporary one. If demand comes roaring back while supply is constrained by federal global warming and anti-drilling policies, we could easily see a return to $4 gas or even worse in the summers ahead. So we better hold off on those future vacation plans.
Thanks, Ben. How many times can I say we can't afford this bill? Okay, moving on. WOR James, welcome to the program.
Michael, I just want to say you are the best talk show host on radio, hands down. Nobody says it more real than you. Every day, 6 o'clock, I tune in. I'm telling you, Michael Savage for president. The passion you speak with, the energy, the intelligence you speak with, I mean, it's all there. And I feel like you're just a super powerful speaker, and you just absorb. And people, like that woman said, the vibrations you give the best type of vibration I can get. It's the realest.
Well, I try my best. I mean, I'm not running for any office. I would never go into politics. I think that's for people with a different type of mentality and a different type of morality than I have. I believe that the best and the brightest do not go into politics. The brightest people I know are not politicians. Some of the worst people I've ever met in my life are politicians. Usually they are failures who could not make it in academics or in business. They go into politics because it's an easier road for them.
Savage.
You know, VP Biden has said that the stimulus plan is working. Okay, sure, it's working for his cronies. But unemployment's high, job creation is still low, and the government is spending at a ridiculously, you know, criminal rate. I don't see how the stimulus plan is working. I don't think I'm alone. And joining us now is James Shirk from the Heritage Foundation to analyze the so-called success of the stimulus plan.
Thanks, Michael. We heard from the vice president that the stimulus bill is working, and working better than they ever hoped it could. Well, that's only the case if you don't care about job creation. If you take a look at what's been happening to the economy, why is unemployment rising so much? Why do economists expect unemployment to continue to rise when we get the new jobs report on Friday? Unemployment is rising not just because layoffs have gone up. They have gone up. They're about 0.3 of a percentage point higher as a share of total employment than they were when the recession started. But the primary reason unemployment has gone up is because job creation has stalled. Job creation has fallen by 0.8 of a percentage point. The fact that entrepreneurs and private businesses are not investing in new projects, are not starting up new businesses, the fact that there are simply fewer jobs out there if you don't have a job, accounts for 2/3 of the increase in unemployment since the recession began. And if you take a look at what's happened, job creation has not picked up since the stimulus bill was passed. This was sold to the American people as something that was going to spur job creation. It hasn't done it. In fact, job creation has continued to fall. Job creation is at the lowest rate that we've seen since the government started a survey that measures job creation rates a decade ago.
Why has it failed?
Well, think about what it is. The stimulus bill is basically an $800 billion grab bag of federal spending on different liberal priorities. These are the policies that Democrats have wanted to push for years and years, but they couldn't when they had Republicans in the White House or they didn't control Congress. Now they control all three branches, and now they're just, you know, passing them all in one fell swoop and calling it economic stimulus. But if you're a business out there, does the fact that the government is spending hundreds of billions of dollars to give money to state governments to keep state government spending high tell you that your project that you're considering going forward with is likely to succeed? Not really. If you're an entrepreneur who's considering starting up his own small business, does the fact that the government is pouring all this money into what's considered politically acceptable forms of renewable energy research encourage you to do anything? Well, unless you're the one receiving the grant for the green energy, no. The fact that the government is spending all this money on all these liberal projects doesn't do anything to tell you that, all right, my company can succeed. Because what's been happening is that entrepreneurs and businesses are looking at the environment right now, and they're very concerned. Credit is hard to come by, and they're pulling back. They're seeing consumers pulling back, and they don't want to take any risks. What we need to do is adopt policies in Washington that promote that kind of risk-taking and that entrepreneurial spirit to get people out there investing. Spending lots and lots and lots of money on government programs does nothing to encourage a business owner that now is the right time to invest. If anything, it discourages it, because people who run businesses are smart. They can look down the road and see that we're going to need much higher taxes to pay for, if nothing else, just the interest payment on this enormous debt that Obama's piling up. They know the taxes are going to have to go up. And who's Washington's favorite target for tax increases? Well, it's businesses, particularly successful businesses. So if you're a businessman and you're looking at taxes going up to pay for all this new spending, you're looking at a government takeover of healthcare, maybe. If you're looking at this car check legislation that would basically force your workplace to become unionized, which might pass. If you're taking a look at cap and trade that's going to make energy much more expensive. Well, all these things are going to raise your cost of doing business and are going to turn, if they pass, what could have been a very profitable business into an unprofitable company that's going to go out of business in a few years. So why take that risk? Why put your good money that you have now into a project that could, because of decisions made in Washington, go down the tubes? So they're holding back. Investment has fallen rather sharply since the recession began. And with that reduced investment, job creation has fallen.
What do they need to do?
In order to get entrepreneurs creating jobs again, in order to get businesses investing again, businesses expanding and hiring, what Washington needs to do is assure them that if they create wealth, if they create successful new businesses, that it's not simply all going to be redistributed away from them because it's once the money's there, Washington wants to take it and give it to a favorite interest group. They need to, beyond that, adopt policies that encourage businesses, encourage entrepreneurs to go out and create wealth and to take risks. Now, as a candidate, President Obama had a very good idea along these lines. He proposed that Washington should get rid of the tax on capital gains on successful business startups, so that when a business goes public for the first time, the people who own the business would not owe any capital gains tax on that. And that's a great idea, because most new businesses fail. Where the people who invest money in new businesses get their money from is they invest in a whole lot of companies. Most of them fail. Some of them just break even. But every 1 in 10 or so are tremendously successful and make enough money to cover all the other losses. Well, if you take away the taxes on those new business startups that succeed, you create the rewards from getting that one business, that one hit, even greater, and that will cover even more failures. And so venture capitalists and entrepreneurs are going to be willing to risk their money on projects that they wouldn't have been willing to risk it on before. Take that chance because the rewards from a successful business startup are that much greater. Those are the kinds of policies that would encourage job creation, that would get the government out of the way, that would stop the government from discouraging entrepreneurs from creating wealth. Now, as a candidate, Obama proposed this. As president, he's done nothing to advance it. But as long as Washington just keeps saying, we're going to spend, we're going to spend, we're going to spend, our plan for helping the economy recover is we're going to spend, it's not going to help. The unemployment insurance, another 92,000 more people are on the unemployment insurance rolls this past week than the week before. 6.2 million Americans are on unemployment insurance. Job creation is at the lowest rate we've seen since the government started measuring these statistics a decade ago. Unemployment is still high, and And the new unemployment report is almost certain to show higher unemployment. We saw from a report on Wednesday that a survey of private sector employment shows that we've probably lost another 250,000 jobs. The stimulus bill is not working. It's not stimulating because it's not addressing the reason unemployment's going up.
Well, why is unemployment going up then?
Unemployment is rising because job creation is falling, because businesses are not investing, because entrepreneurs are not taking risks and starting new businesses. Anything that doesn't address that, anything that's simply spending money on liberal priorities, that doesn't encourage entrepreneurs to take risks and create wealth, is not going to get our economy back on its feet and is not going to help. It might be politically popular. It might allow the vice president or the president to hold press conferences and talk about how much money they've spent and what they've spent it on. But spending money doesn't guarantee results, and the stimulus so far has failed.
James Shirk, thanks for the report, and thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me on.
Savage.
You know, every time Joe Biden gets in front of a microphone, he seems to put his foot in his mouth. Now he seems to be engaging in pure fantasy. Now he claims that Barack Obama has created a million jobs. Where? Listen to this nonsense.
200 days ago, President Obama signed into law the third piece of our economic plan, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. And today, there's a growing consensus. The Recovery Act is, in fact, working. We don't just take my word for it. Analysts from Moody's to IHS Global Insight to the Economic Policy Institute and others all estimate the Recovery Act has created or saved between 500,000 and 750,000 jobs. Matter of fact, some notable economists suggest the number is as high as a million.
A million jobs? That's funny. The last time I looked, we had record unemployment. The last time I looked, Obama's stimulus was creating jobs overseas, not here in America. Oh, I get it. He's created a million jobs in China. Thank you, Joe Biden. Play the next clip.
As Australia's Prime Minister Kevin Rudd said a couple of weeks ago, and I quote, "This is a case study in bringing the world back from the brink, and it was the American leadership from President Obama that was the key," end of quote. You know, it all adds up to this, in my view at least. The Recovery Act has played a significant role in changing the trajectory of our economy and changing the conversation about the economy in this country. Instead of talking about the beginning of a depression, we're talking about the end of a recession 8 months after taking office.
So now he's asking Australians what he should think about the economy. Hey, Mr. Biden, why don't you ask one of the American factory workers whose jobs were sent to China how he thinks Obama's doing? Next.
The Recovery Act is not a single silver bullet. I think of it as silver buckshot, as opposed to a single bullet. In 200 days, the President's Recovery and Reinvestment Act isn't just working toward something. It's working toward something. It's working toward a more resilient, more transformative economy.
Silver buckshot. Transformative economy. Mr. Biden, if you think sending gang members out to make people put solar panels on their roofs is going to transform our economy into anything but a police state and a disaster, you've got another think tank coming. Today, I'm learning how to deal with this, you know, problem of David and Goliath. You know, it isn't easy being David with Goliath clomping around. Today I was on my bicycle, as I usually am most days. So I don't know what it was. I was pushing my bicycle across a crosswalk, and a truck went by. A guy stopped, and he let me pass. I usually said thank you. You know, I said thank you with a wave. And he yelled out, "Mike, I love your show. Michael, I love your show. I'm with you on the England thing." And you know what? It was so it gave me so much enthusiasm to realize that there are people out there who really do listen to the show, who really do hear what's going on in the world around them, who really do know that an injustice has been done to an innocent man, and they are on my side. So don't think it doesn't matter. Your mere thinking about me helps. When Labor Day is over, I'm going to actually ask you to help me through a letter-writing campaign and an email campaign. We're going to e-blast Congress. We're going to try and get the few honest men and women left in Congress to demand that the British government take my name off the list and do the right thing. And you're going to have a big role in that. Remember, you stopped the Dubai ports deal. You stopped the illegal aliens with the McCain-Kennedy bill to grant amnesty to 30 million illegal aliens. You did that. You do have the power to control your country. Don't be so defeated by Obama and his minions in the press to think that you've lost control of the country. If anything, you've actually seen that you have more power than you did under Bush. If you could see what effect the town halls have had already on derailing, the town hall meetings derailed the plan for socialized medicine that the Democrats wanted to impose upon you. The town hall meetings have driven Obama's ratings into the basement, and they're going lower every day. In fact, my belief is that after the polls are taken, after the release of the Lockerbie terrorist and Obama's, I would say, tepid, meek, anemic response to it, I think his poll numbers will drop another 4 to 5 points in this week. By mere fact that he continued to go away on vacation, that he did not take credit for the corruption of Charles Schumer's Cash for Clunkers program, $2 billion burned up, where'd the money go? Who got that money? Why did Schumer want another $2 billion? Who was investigating Schumer? Was it the CIA? Is that why suddenly they released the ACLU on the CIA? You know, you don't see any connections there. I do. I see tremendous political connections because the ACLU has been dying to do this for a couple of months now, but they were held back by the Obamaites. Why suddenly, when Obama went to Martha's Vineyard, was the radical ACLU unleashed on the CIA? What was the CIA about to release on Obama or on Schumer or on the ACLU itself, if anything? We don't know. And when the reason we don't know is we don't have a free press anymore. If we still had a vigorous investigative press, if we still had a great cadre of investigative reporters who truly were independent, I think these questions would be answered. But we don't. Unfortunately, we don't. By the way, one of the greatest contributors to Pelosi is, again, the Sandler team. They're monster contributors to Nancy Pelosi. John in Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mike, how are you? My comment relates to you're talking about logical thinking. And basically, you're talking about the CIA and who unleashed the ACLU on the CIA. Well, right. Several months back, Nancy Pelosi was called to the carpet about waterboarding, how she said she was never at the meeting when it
was waterboarding. That is right. She made herself public enemy, the number one enemy of the CIA. It was the CIA versus Pelosi. So you think she pulled the trigger?
Revenge is best served cold. So she disappeared to China shortly thereafter, went on a world tour, and now all of a sudden she comes back and flies under the radar, and now the CIA is under
attack. No, she's a very, very, very powerful woman, perhaps the most powerful woman in the United States of America, and there's no reason to believe that you're wrong. So you have to ask yourself, what did the CIA have on Pelosi that she hates them so much? I mean, it's one thing to be a radical left-wing politician. It's another thing to go after the very defense cells of a nation. Why would she go after the white blood cells of America? Would anyone listening to the show tell me that the vermin in the ACLU are our best defenders? That you would trust the country to these radical lawyers, these perverts, and these drug addicts? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Please visit the website. Visit me on Facebook. Whatever the address is, it's on my website. I speak, therefore I am, every day, 3 hours a day, and that's what it is. That's what it's all about. Any topic comes up, it comes up out of the blue sometimes. Yes, I do research. Yes, I have a staff of 3, 4, 5 people pulling stories. Yes, there are stories I think that are in the news that I like to talk about, but in the midst of it, I will bring things up that are not in the news, such as I did today. I bring new elements to it, such as why today. You hear that the media immediately jumps and says that they put a loaded gun to the terrorist's head. Did they shoot him? No. That they threatened the terrorist's family. So what? So what do you mean they threatened the family? These are people who either were involved with or would actually kill your family. I give a rat's behind whether or not the brave men who had the guts to actually go into an interrogation room with them threatened their family and didn't actually hurt their family. Are you kidding me when we're dealing with the most horrendous people on the planet? I don't think you people live in the real world who would take the side of the ACLU. I think you live in a dreamland. I think that you're either drug addicted or you were raised by very, very sick red diaper doper baby parents. And you are the sum total, the product of a red diaper doper baby upbringing, an RDDP. And right now the country is being run by the RDDBs, the Red Diaper Doper Babies. And boy, are we in trouble. This is the Savage Nation. Everything that your ancestors fought against, the fear that communists would change our way of life, that communists would take over America, everything that your ancestors may have died for has happened. We have a naked communist in the White House. I stand by those words. And I'll repeat why over and over again. A, he surrounds himself with czars like Van Jones, who are open Leninist Marxists. Number two, look at this now. Take a look at this. Honduras. They throw out the corrupt Marxist dictator, Zelaya. His own Supreme Court throws him out. The people said, no, you're not going to come back. You had your terms. You served them. There were term limits. He said, no, I want to do away with term limits. I want another term. It went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said to Zelaya, get out of the Honduras. He comes back. The military throws him out. Take a guess what Obama just did with Hillary Clinton. The United States took the side of the communist dictator Zelaya in Honduras. How many different ways do you have to see what's going on? They're nice to Chavez, who is in Syria, saying that Israel's a cancer on the world. Chavez, Zelaya, Obama. How far do you think it has to go until you wake up one day and you're a prisoner in your own country? And why are the Republicans silent? Where is the Republican Party? They're worthless. They're totally worthless. What good are they? You know, in England, you have a corrupt labor socialist government under Gordon Brown, as you well know, who banned me from entering the country because they're afraid of my stand on many issues, including borders, language, and culture. This piece of garbage is the man behind releasing the Lockerbie bomber. The people in England hate his guts. He's going to be thrown out very shortly, and a so-called shadow government, which exists now, will take power. See, they always have two parties in England. They have the party in power, then they have what's called a shadow government. We should have a shadow government called the opposition, meaning the minority party, but they're silent. Why are they so silent? Why are the Republicans silent? And is their silence not complete? Does that silence not indicate a complicit acceptance of the Obama Marxism? How many years did I warn you that George Bush was a fiscal socialist? How many years did I say to you, George Bush is not a fiscal conservative? I was the first in the media to note it. I was the first in the media to say it. Unfortunately, no one listened to me, as they're not hearing me now. George Bush is the man who greased the skids for the takeover by this imposter, Obama. The same power structure that put Bush in wanted Obama in, and they're making billions and billions of dollars off Obama's policies.
Savage.